It's not that different with these four quarterbacks. Now, you get to Jalen Milroe, that's a whole different mess that you got to like really dig in the weeds and try to figure out what we're going to do and how that's going to work and have a long-term plan, because he's as far away as you can possibly be with such phenomenal tools.
All right, dudes, welcome on in again to another episode. Brent Rollins joins me as always. Interesting week, because all of your college football viewing that you've had all year, and some of y'all for 3 years, some of y'all for 4 years, some of y'all for 5 years of your guys, and with COVID, some of y'all with longer, now they go to combines. And combines is one of the strangest things I've ever been to in my life. I'm just telling you, Brent, like, it's interesting, it's strange, it's weird, it's cool, it's weirder, it's just one of those things. It's uncomfortable, it's awkward. But I do remember this vaguely too, though. Like, it is the first real chance you get to like size yourself up next to your competition. And you know me, like, I was literally, I'm like, all right, who's taller? Like, I've heard this, I've heard that. Like, so and so is supposed to be a baller. Like, what kind of personality do they have? So I think that was one of the things that combines I thought was pretty cool. So we'll cover this from every angle, and Todd McShay will be joining us soon.
The combine, I'm assuming, was a, you know, it wasn't as much the underwear Olympics as it is now. It feels like things have gotten
more underwear-y.
Exactly. It's probably the best way to say it. So I asked, let's talk back to your experience with the combine, and let's maybe look at your performance at the combine a little bit here, if we can, because I went back and looked and dug up some numbers, and I think you did okay in certain things, more so than others. I will say that was your strength. So let me just go through and look at some of these numbers. 6'2", 265 in terms of weight. Now, I'm going to ask you a question because I kind of know the answer. It's a leading question. Were you actually 265?
Yes, I was. What you're thinking of is when they came in the spring. When the NFL came in the spring, they weighed. Well, I decided to stay for my senior year. When I decided to stay for my senior year, one of the things I wanted to work on was I started to take food and nutrition courses. And typical me, Brent, like, when I do something, I don't do anything half but. Yeah. And so, like, I started to eat like clean as could be, and I dropped to like 245 like that. I mean, I dropped so much weight, like 40 pounds. And they came in the spring, and so, you know, we wore shorts. We did not wear, it was not as underwear-y. And so I slipped a 5-pound plate in my right girdle and then a 5-pound plate in my left girdle. And then I think I remember seeing, like, hey, he actually was a really good looking, like, 255. He was solid, you know, lean, like, slim and trim looking 255. So that definitely, that kind of stuff definitely, definitely.
He's added a lot of muscle in the offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in the weight room, baby.
All right, so up on the screen there is your relative athletic score. I don't know if you've ever seen these. This great guy, Kim Platt, on Math.
Brent works for PFF and for Rivals. So, like, this is in his wheelhouse. Like, he's also a professor. Like, this is why you see this stuff.
Numbers.
I think it's amazing. This is how his brain works. Like, go ahead, spit this to me. I have no clue what this means, any of it.
All right, so obviously 1 to 10, 10 being the best. Like, for example, Trayvon Walker was a 10. He was one of the most elite in terms of height, weight, speed combo guys. So for you, you were obviously lower on the edge based upon your position for height, weight part. Bench, 25 reps on the bench. Ugh. I feel like you could beat that today.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
225, that seems a little soft for you. I was actually shocked. I thought that number would be at least 30. And then we go some of the speed stuff. So 40 yards. I've seen two numbers. I see this one at 4.81. I also saw a 4.75 number. Do you remember what your 40 time was exactly at the combine?
I don't.
Was it the lower one?
I mean, sure. It'll make it sound better. Yeah, I was for sure 4.7 something.
Well, all right. And then the thing where you excelled were the explosive measurements. So vertical jump, 37 inches, which is 86th percentile for your position.
Solid.
And then the three cone, is a phenomenal time on the three cone. I think, and then the short shuttle or the 20-yard shuttle, 3.94, is in the 99th percentile. So the explosive metrics were definitely there. And I think I read an article like when you were maybe looking at coming back to the Bengals that you even got down lower than that in the three cone, like a 6.7 or something like that when you were working back from the injury.
Well, because I lost weight. You know, I lost weight now. And I honestly, like I did it not too long ago, like the 5.10.5, the shuttle. I didn't do the three cone, but when you take all that weight off, I'm only 245 now. Like it's pretty close or maybe a little bit better. So yeah, that was absolutely the reason why people thought I would be successful or had a chance to be successful was because of my get off. I was really quick twitch, even though, you know, every time you read these gurus and it was always high motor guy, first guy in, last guy out. And again, those are called coded words to mean he's white. That's what that means. He's light skinned because when you're light skinned, it looks different. Like Dan Jackson, not getting invited to combines at the safety spot, light skinned. Like that's kind of the way it works sometimes. And you're classified in a certain area and that's part of it. You know,
so you mentioned awkward. What was the most awkward thing at the combine?
My interview with the Saints was fantastic. It was the defensive line coach literally looked at me and he was like, "Hey, we took Jonathan Sullivan, you know, 2 years ago." And he said, he didn't say the nicest things about him. I'm not trying to be, you know, he was my teammate. He pointed out some of the things that he did not like about Jonathan. And, he was like, "What makes me think that you're going to be a guy that doesn't try hard?" You know, because Jonathan's, you know, he didn't work as hard as he could all the time, and but he was like coming at me pretty hard. Like he was literally, you know, he was kind of pushing the envelope. And I think, listen, a lot of times in these meetings, they want to poke you and prod you, and they want to see how you react to things. And I was like, "Hey, sir, have you ever seen me play?" And he was like, "Yeah, I've seen you play." I was like, "Are you worried about how hard I play?" And he was like, "Not really." I was like, "Yeah, that's not really a concern. I mean, I love the game of football. I love to practice the game of football. I love to play the game of football. Like, there's nothing about competition that I don't like." And so that was, you know, that's kind of one of those stories where because you interview with all the different coaches and you go from room to room. And I remember sitting down with Tony Dungy. Minutes. He was one of my favorite guys to sit down with. And he was like, "Hey, man. I love your attitude. I love your faith. I love everything about you." He was like, "I wanted to sit down in front of you and get in front of you." He was like, "But we're not taking you because you won't be there." He was like, "You're not even remotely going to be there in the 30s or in the late 20s. Like, so I appreciate you and I wanted to get to know you and I think you'd be good with so-and-so." And so those are the kind of things you go from room to room. And it's really fun because some of the coaches want to see how you react to certain things. And some of them want to push your buttons and see if you'll. Denny Green was a good one for me. He was like, "Arizona, we're rebuilding. Like we are. This is building from the ground up. Like I want guys that want to be a Cardinal, that want to be excited about being a Cardinal." And he was like, "Do you want to be a Cardinal?" And I'm like, "God, no, I don't want to be a Cardinal. Like the Cardinals suck. Who wants to be a Cardinal?" So that's what you're saying on the inside. But you're like, "Yeah, coach, like I'm all in. Listen, you draft me, I want to be a Cardinal." So it's those kind of great stories that you get at combine. Speaking of Todd McShay, like my man joining us from the Todd McShay Show. You can find him on YouTube. And obviously this time of year is his time of year. He hasn't seen the sun in at least – actually went to the Senior Bowl. So besides that, he just sits in a cave. They feed him through the door with like just like a prison, just feed him through the door. Family drops it in there and he just watches tape and just clicks the whole.
I lost my razor too.
It looks like it, my man. How you been, brother?
Good, man. I apologize for being late. I was pulling up this old 2005 draft guide.
So is this, Brent, I've gone back and forth with Todd about this and, he really annoys me because, you know, the gritty short-armed guy that wasn't very athletic.
No, Brent, I think it's important for you to understand. What was your first year at ESPN, Pollock?
Oh, God.
Over a decade ago, right?
Oh, yeah. I was there. I was on game day for 14. So, at least 15 years ago.
For like 20 years ago. 15 years he's been busting my stones about you and everyone else. Stereotyped me. No one thought I was athletic. No one thought I, you know, everyone wrote me up. I was a try hard guy and, you know, wanted to be there and was smart and did all the right things and technically sound. So I don't know why it took me 14, 15 years, but I finally dusted this thing off in October after he came on the show and needled me again and said, I'll get to you. Let me read this to you. Does this read like I stereotyped him? Like I put him in a box. First of all, the NFL comparison was Leonard Little. Second of all, I wrote, has excellent short area power, uses hands, quick, agile, powerful, and explosive. Changes directions quickly. Shows initial quickness and closing burst of an elite edge rusher. Forces a lot of fumbles on the quarterback. Yes, he did lack prototypical and ideal height and length. Arm length, and he told us how he messed up even with his arm length in the combine. That's fine. Good initial upfield burst, plays with consistent leverage, can be dominant and disruptive. Pollock is an elite playmaker who improved his draft stock by staying in school. He makes up for his lack of height and elite timed speed with quickness, intensity, power, and also the ability to change directions. There.
I mean, that seems pretty spot on. I don't know about you, Davey. I think he got you pegged pretty well there.
I think it's revisionist history. I think he went back, but hey, I can tell you this.
Anyone can pause it. And
I mean, I saw Cedric Benson. I think it was on the cover, right? Is that who it was on the cover?
Yep, Cedric Benson, Maurice Claret, obviously. Aaron Rodgers. Wow.
Yeah. Well, here's what I will say. The guy you used to work with and we used to work with, Mel Kiper, I vividly remember him talking about me. And I've told Todd this. He literally said, arms are too short. He's going to get swallowed up. Tackles are too big. And when I went to Combines, I told Todd this on the Todd McShay show. I literally was so pissed off and so frustrated that I was like this. They're like, stretch your arms as far as you can. I'm like, I'm good. I'm right here. Like, this is all I got. Like, I wanted to have short arms because I wanted to absolutely stick it up his hanky. Like, I wanted
he lost $1 million for that move.
Yes. Yeah. So stupid. Nobody said I was smart. That wasn't in the rundown, but that's kind of how I was built, unfortunately. And so Todd, you're looking at all these guys, man, all these guys for the draft coming up. Yeah. And, you can find the McShay report on the Ringer. You're putting that together. And, you know, this is what you've done for so long. And obviously, you know it inside and out. What makes this draft unique or different or what sticks out about it?
It's not a sexy class. Like, you know, if I was still at ESPN, it would be kind of, you know, manufacturing storylines because it's not the quarterback class. And it's tough to follow up a year like last year, right? Six quarterbacks go in the top 12 picks. That's a dream come true for TV executives and for NFL teams in the market. It's not a great receiver class either. And we've been spoiled. The NFL has been spoiled the last, I don't know, decade or so with great receiver classes. But I think the second most important position is not because I'm here talking to you. The second most important, you know, position of priority, if you will, is finding pass rushers.
Philadelphia Eagles.
I mean, at what point are we going to take a step back and say, all right, there's a method to all of this. There's a foundation in which the great organizations continue to stay at the top and are in the playoffs over and over again. Let's look at what they've done. Let's look at what Howie Roseman, the GM from the Eagles, has done. Every year it's like, well, we should draft a wide receiver. We need this. Let's put in that. We're only a piece away, but it's Georgia guys. So you guys got to love that. But in addition, it's defensive front and then cornerback. They have spent so much draft capital on building that defensive front, but all these organizations across the board, right? It's get your quarterback, and that guy can make up for a lot of sins with the 10 other guys on that side of the ball. But once we've identified that we've got our guy, we've got to load up on the defensive side, and it starts up front. And the Buffalo Bills have done that since getting Josh Allen. Brett Veach and Andy Reid, the Chiefs, have done that since getting Patrick Mahomes. I mean, literally, you go back and study their drafts, it's like three of the top four picks are on the defensive side, four of the top six, five in a row. The Chiefs, the Bills, the Eagles, the Ravens, they going back to Ozzie Newsome, their GM, and now Eric DaCosta. All the great organizations, the Packers have done it for a long time. When you get your quarterback, attack the defensive side. And this year, ready for this? I've got 20 edge guys and 17 interior defensive linemen with grades in the first three rounds. That's like seven above the three-year average at each of those positions. It's absolutely loaded on that side of the ball on the defensive front. And then the running back class, which is not the sexiest position. It's not a position of priority. It's actually down the totem pole towards the end with like safety and off the ball linebacker. But the league is, you know, you're seeing more of the running back influence. And
does Saquon help these guys?
Saquon helps these guys. I think even like watching what Jahmyr Gibbs has done in a rotation.
Yeah.
And then watching Travion Henderson from Ohio State and be like, yeah, we couldn't stay healthy 2 years in 2022, 2023. He was the guy and he couldn't stay healthy. But then they go bring in Judkins in free agency. And now all of a sudden he's a 16-game player. And he's making an impact and he's got fresher legs and he's having a 70-yard run before half in a critical moment. So I just think, to me, when you start a draft class at running back, and 2017 is kind of is the year that's been regarded as the great running back class over the past couple of decades. That was Christian McCaffrey, Leonard Fournette, and all those guys. I think this class could be as good. I truly do. They had 30 running backs taken that year. There are, I think, 36 that were invited to the combine. And at the top of the board, I just think, starting with Ashton Jeanty from Boise State, I also think Omarion Hampton, we didn't really get to talk about a lot this college football season, from North Carolina. I put on his tape and started studying him, man. Holy smokes. Like, if Jeanty's the McCaffrey from that class, this guy's kind of later on his feet as a Fournette. And then beyond that, you know, I mentioned Travion Henderson, Caleb Johnson from Iowa is a great player. RJ Harvey from UCF. I mean, there's just a ton of good running backs. That's not even mentioned, like, Cam Scadaboo, probably the best individual performance in the college football playoff of any player and one of the most valuable players. I still don't know how he wasn't invited to New York for the Heisman. Damian Martinez at Miami. Like, you just go down the line. I can't ever remember a running back class with this much talent and with these many guys from big time programs that were impactful.
So, speaking of that position, you've got in your first mock that I think I heard you say, you first mock in 2 years. You've got over on the sub McShay report. You've got three RBs in round one. Does that? How do you weigh given the depth of the class that you just talked about, and guys like Devin Neal even is another one to me that later, how do you value, do I go take a Jeanty or a Hampton in round one or a Henderson, or wait and get this guy at pick 90 or pick 110?
That's going to be the tricky part, and it's actually a great question. Here's the argument for drafting one of these guys. Like, they're just – unbelievably talented. Like, I think
they're that good.
And you know what I mean? Like, I think Hampton's one of the 15 best players in this class. I think Jeanty's one of the five best football players in this class. I think Travion Henderson in that role can be dynamic and can provide kind of the spark that you've seen Gibbs give that Detroit offense. The argument against it is starts with what you just said, right? I'm looking at this and like, I can get a guy later. And then advancing that argument is, I like the guys on the defensive front in rounds two and three, but my goodness, I mean, I love Abdul Carter, and I love you know, Jalen Walker and Mykael Williams, and I love Mason Graham, an interior defensive lineman for Michigan, and his teammate Kenneth Grant and Walter Nolan from Ole Miss. So, like, if it comes down to similar grades, 9 out of 10, maybe 10 out of 10, to be honest with you, you're going to take the defensive lineman. So it's going to be interesting to see when you get into the 20s, and Ginty, I believe, will be gone by then. Maybe Dallas at 12, I want to say, is where I put him in that last mock. It'll be interesting to see, because we started off by saying, all right, the great GMs, the great organizations are loading up on these defensive linemen, but we get three running backs going in the first round. So something's got to give with the theories here. I can guarantee you one will go in the first. I'll be surprised if two don't. Three, I wouldn't run to FanDuel and try to, you know, put some money on that right away. But I certainly think that there's a chance.
So, Cowboy fans, I know you heard that. The great organizations build defensively defensive line. So that's why he has you guys mocking Ashton Ginty. When you look at
you said
the quarterbacks, it's usually what we talk about first. I don't studying these guys, Todd, all year, watching them. I don't see a guy that like makes me scream and makes me pound the table for him that says he's easily going to translate. So I'll let you stab at these quarterbacks, but I also want to throw in this caveat. Like, if they were in last year's class where you had six guys that went in the top 15? So when these guys compared to those guys, how quick are you pulling the trigger? You know, do two of them go in the top 15, or do you? So kind of a multi-part question.
Yeah. Let's start with the last question, comparing it to last year's class. There's absolutely no debate or discussion, and rank them however you'd want after their rookie year. But Caleb, Jaden, and Drake, the top three quarterbacks taken that were taken in that order, you're just not discussing any of those guys in the conversation. I still believe J.J. McCarthy would be drafted in kind of that second tier. Now, granted, like, Michael Penix came off the board before we expected. I wasn't as high on Bo Nix. I can sit here and admit it, and I'm okay with it. Like, I wasn't as high on Bo Nix as some people were. I had an early second-round grade on him, and he had a great rookie year, and it was the perfect place for him, you know, being with Sean Payton in that offense. But I think if you start in this class, it's probably at number five. Some people could argue it's at number four. But I think if Cam Ward's your number one guy, you're probably starting at five in last year's class, okay? And then I think it would then go to Penix, Nix, and Shador after that, you know? And so I think that if you're putting it in a tier, I think it would be like JJ and Cam. And then the next tier for me, you would have the discussion of Shador with those other two guys, Penix and Nix. And what's interesting to me, man, and we'll get into Cam and we'll get into Shador. When I was done studying all the tape from this past year, I honest to God think that Tyler Shuck from Louisville, based off of 1 year on tape, if you're just dropped on this planet, and you're looking at 1 year of tape, is as good as any of those guys. Maybe you start him at two behind Cam Ward in terms of the natural talent and what Ward could develop into. But I might take him if I didn't know anything about anything. I might take Tyler Shuck over Shador Sanders.
But the injuries have to play in, right?
3 years in a row.
Yes.
Do you? How about this little nugget? You know his first
nugget
year? Me. Shuck's first year. He was a backup quarterback to Justin Herbert. Think about that. Like, think about how, like, Pro Bowls and what Herbert's been through in the NFL. He was the backup and took and was in the wings. He was the starter the next year. The problem is he had 1 year as the starter, kind of up and down that program was and his play was as a first-year starter. And then wound up getting injured the next year, transfers to Texas Tech, gets injured. It's two collarbones and what was the other injury?
I think it was a knee, wasn't it?
It might have been a knee, but three injuries, 3 years in a row, finally transfers again to Louisville, gets with the Brahms, gets some development, has a healthy year, and his tape was awesome. I mean, yeah, he gets stuck a little bit on progressions here and there. First year in a long time starting and playing a whole season. But I'm telling you, like, from the ability to tuck the ball and run, he's faster than those other guys on tape. I don't know what he's going to run the 40. I don't really care. But I'm telling you, like, when he tucks it, it's like a downhill train. I'm not saying he's super fast. Like, we're not talking Lamar or even Josh Allen, but I'm saying, like, he goes a little bit faster. He's not as, like, creative and elusive, you know, when the play breaks down, but he's got a little magic, like changing arm.
The arm angles are sick. Yeah,
right? I mean, I don't suggest making that touchdown throw in Notre Dame.
Going left and underhanding it, basically.
Yeah, like, I'm not suggesting that procedure, if you will, but I love the result. And it shows you what he's capable of. And there's some other ones where he's just flicking the wrist. He's got a better arm than Shador. He's got a better arm than Dart. And Dart has a pretty good arm, man. I think Cam probably slightly better, but they're in that same tier of arm strength. And his ball placement was as consistent, if not more consistent, than the other three guys. So he's the most fascinating quarterback in this class. And to your credit, man, like, I always thought Dart was a system guy. I didn't love his tape from the previous 2 years.
That's my spirit animal. Don't mess with my boy Dart.
You came on in November, I think it was, and I said, give us a guy in the draft that you like more than a lot of other people, and you went with Dart. And I'll never forget the two quotes you've given me on quarterbacks that I love. One, that's my spirit animal, talking about Jackson Dart. And it's relatable the way he plays. He's like, he's got like a linebacker's mentality to it. He's aggressive and competitive. Like, every play matters. But as a passer, I saw advancement in his game. And I saw him, like, the ball placement was better. The progression reads were better. Little decisions, like throwing with a defensive back to him, putting it in a place where his receiver could go get it. No way. Like, you saw the game experience start to come out in him. The other quote that I love, though, on a kind of a different level, was that Quinn Ewers is, like, you know, the most beautiful guy at the driving range, man. And you left it at that.
I mean, hey, the driving range is just grooving it right down the middle. We're not aiming really at anything, but my stroke is smooth and powerful, and the ball, I'm like, oh,
like, trajectory. Beautiful. Yep. But there's a lot more to playing golf than the driving range. So,
very much so.
Yeah.
So that quarterback class, then, do you think there's a world, almost a sort of greater than 50% chance world, where QB 3, 4, 5, 2, 3, 4 years down the road is QB 1 of this draft?
Yes, absolutely. And we've seen that a lot before, right? But it will not surprise me at all. No one likes to talk about it because it makes for boring conversations, because we don't know where that's going to be or who that's going to be with. But so much of this, if you study the history, is where the quarterback winds up. I get news for you. If Bo Nix goes and plays for the Patriots this year, it's ugly. Bo Nix goes and plays for the Bears this year, it's even uglier. So, And that's not a knock on both. I'm just saying, like, every year you can have those
Josh
discussions.
Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson fall into better teams the further we go here. It's pretty simple.
Right. And yes. And so, and also, like, you had an organization in Baltimore that like went all in on him after a year, and they had Flacco and they had time to develop Lamar. With Buffalo, they had Brian Daboll, and I know Brian takes all sorts of crap for everything, and that's fine, but he can develop a quarterback, man. And so, and Patrick Mahomes, like, yeah, he was always going to be Patrick Mahomes. I get it. But it sped up real fast when he got that year off with Andy Reid behind Alex Smith, who's willing to work with him. You know what I mean? So much of it comes down to that, but I'm telling you, the tape is not that different. It's different in some regards, and I think especially with Cam, but it's not that different with these four quarterbacks. Now, you get to Jalen Milroe, that's a whole different mess that you got to, like, really dig in the weeds and try to figure out what we're going to do and how that's going to work. and have a long-term plan, because he's as far away as you can possibly be with such phenomenal tools in terms of the deep ball accuracy and the mobility. But he's at least a two-year project if you're going to try to develop him the right way.
He feels like an eagle in round three, by the way.
Yeah, right? Right?
To go behind Hurts.
Yeah.
Feels like would be great for him.
Something like that, where it's not like, oh, well, we've got to bridge the gap guy in front of you. We've got a guy with 2 or 3 years left of like the best years of his career. And so there's no rush to develop you. And maybe we'll utilize you in a package short yardage. But the realistic goal is going to be, we're going to use a third round pick on you, and we're going to develop you behind the scenes, no pressure. And hopefully in two, three years, we've got something here.
All right, let's get back to the Underwear Olympics you're about to head to.
Yeah.
So exciting. So much fun to be half naked running 40s in front of other grown men. What do you actually get from the combines? Like, what is productive? Because it is people running. It's not football. We do 7-on-7 every year, and I'm like, this is fantastic. There's a use for this. It ain't football. Like, this is not telling me who's great at football. Mm-hmm. This is telling me who can play a different type of a game. So, like, what are you looking for from the combine? What are the main things you're trying to get from it?
Unfortunately, the stuff that's reported – and the stuff not reported, the stuff that's covered, right, for NFL Network, ESPN, and the stuff that is going to be all over your social media and on YouTube and everywhere else, is going to be the 40-yard dashes, the arm lengths, the hand spans for quarterbacks, the vertical jumps, the broad jumps, the short shuttles, the three cones, all that stuff. The combine started because they wanted to save on money and get all these cats in one place and do medical exams. And while they were there, they're like, "Well, shoot, we might as well interview them and get to know them a little more." And then it advanced to like administering the psychological tests. And so like then ultimately it was, well, they're here, let's put some workout clothes on and let's run a 40, you know? And so it evolved into that. So the long-winded answer is, while there are things to take from it, the most important aspects are not the things you see on TV. But from the stuff on TV and the exciting, fun stuff to talk about, I think there's something with every position. That's how I look at it. Cornerback and wide receiver, you get more from in Indy in the workouts than any two other positions. Like Tariq Woolen, for example, his tape wasn't very good. Small school guy. Winds up going, I think it was the fifth round he fell to.
Fifth or sixth, maybe. It was late, though.
Late. But he put on a show at the combine, and you could see the traits. And I said it when he worked out. I said it after watching tape, and then when he worked out again, and when the numbers were official, when we ran like in the 4.3s, that wingspan, 6.3, all of that. I was like, he's a Seattle Seahawk. You know, and there's a lot of other teams that run that scheme, that cover three, you know, press. All you got to do is turn and run. You got one area. And they always have liked tall, long corners with speed. And that's exactly where he wound up going. And we've seen the career he's had. So the cornerbacks, to me, it's the combination of arm length and 40 time. If you go study like the history of the cornerback position, it's not everyone, but you can glean a lot from those two measurables alone. 40 time and arm length. And I created this measurables that matter list, right? And I'm a lunatic with this stuff. Like wide receivers, 40 yard dash is important. Like, and you're looking for guys who have that different speed, but also the vertical jump that correlates to success in the league. And anything below, like anything above a 4.55 is not ideal. 4.62. That's the other part too, not to bore people here. I think you can, there's more, I don't want to say.
Exclusion more, criteria versus inclusion criteria.
That's why you're smarter than me. And that's absolutely why Pollock has you next to him, because he need, you know, that's the, I didn't mention smarts.
That's
in
the day job, before. Bringing the day job to football.
That's exclusion criteria. So anything over 4.62, you go and look at the history. it ain't very good. Okay. So with every position, there's different things. The most intriguing is that, like, the interior offensive lineman, the weight adjusted 20 yard shuttle, that short shuttle they run. You talk about, like, almost everyone who's run a 4.45 or faster in that has gone on to have success in the league. It's crazy. And then the defensive ends that are under 265, the three cone drill, 6.9 or faster. Only 25 guys have run a 6.91 or faster since 2008. Look at that list sometime. It's pretty remarkable. So all these different positions, there's something to take from it. And there's some players that you start to exclude and say, at the very least, he doesn't belong in this bucket. Let's start moving him down the board.
So given that looking at this edge class, the depth of the edge class from the tape and the measurables component, who are you like, hey, I'm dialed in to watch this guy to see if he does meet some of these criteria in the edge class?
Well, first of all, like, who's the strength and conditioning coach at Georgia?
Scott
Sinclair.
Yeah. Like, they don't pay him enough, man. Have you, like, you go back, like Jordan Davis, Devontae Walker overshadowed with one of the best interior defensive line workouts in a long time. Trayvon
Nolan
Walker,
Smith ran 4.3.
Nolan Smith. I mean, it's like every year, right? And then now you get two dudes coming in. Jalen Walker could be more different, obviously. One's an off the ball hybrid edge guy who I'm curious to get your take, Pollock, but I think he's a better edge rusher than he is off the ball player. But I just love the way he plays the game. I just like it. It's going to succeed, but I want to see let's make sure the numbers match up to someone who's going to be undersized and has to have elite, workout numbers and kind of the explosiveness, if you will. With Mikel, it's going to, obviously his wingspan is going to be ridiculous. He's going to work out well for his size, and it's going to help him. I think that Shamar Stewart, young man from Texas A&M, like, from everything I read and the explosion you see on tape, like, his sack production isn't great, but he was one of the top pressure guys in the SEC and in the country last year. Like, I just watched him on tape against Missouri. It's play like 47. Plays 47 through 55 on that tape, if you get a chance to watch. They're up like 24-7 at one point and 31-7. He's playing like it's fourth quarter in the national championship. And so, like, I get where people are saying, well, you know.
How many sacks did he have in that stretch?
None.
Huh.
Give him the line, DP. Give him the line.
Well, I got another line for you, McShay. He reminds me of a dude on the dock fishing, or dude in a boat, McShay. The fishing pole just shoof. Man, dude, it looks so good. Like, the release is sick. It comes out, no fish.
He's got all the technology.
I'll throw it out again. We're still wait. I am 100% with you, T-Mac. Like, I see the explosiveness. I see the strength. I see it all, but I'm like, bro, at some point you got to catch me some fish. You can't just fish all day long and not get me anything.
All right. Chandler Jones was a little bit like that.
Chandler's been all right. He's pretty good.
I'm just saying, like, he won't be the first, but I promise you, it's not the analogy they're using. It's the exact conversations I'm having with guys in the league. Like, the exact. I'll talk to one guy and he'll be like, I like him. I see the potential. He's going to get better. Let's work with him, work on getting home, blah, 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 blah.
Alway was like that for me for Penn State. Remember him?
Yep.
He was very simple, like, stupid 40.
But
like,
never any production in college.
Quarterback, yeah.
But he has in the NFL.
Yeah, he's been pretty good.
Yeah. So he's going to be a fascinating one. I want to see, too, like, Marshall, Mike Green, I mean.
Yeah, from Marshall.
I want to see if the measurables add up. I mean, this class is so good. It's so loaded. I like the two LSU guys, too. I actually like, you talk about production and pressure, like, Swinson. I like Swinson more than a lot of people, too. So, not surprising. It's just loaded. Georgia, Tennessee. I don't know what's going on. We'll find out about James Pierce and what's real, what's not. I just know this on tape. You talk about a guy when he's on the field, and I get it. They were like hockey lines, like, you know,
they were.
But his tape is so good. He gets home. He's a finisher.
All right. So here's what I like about Todd McShay now. Like, you ain't beholden to anybody. Like, that's what's beautiful about our new world, Todd. Like,
yes,
we can say what we want, how we want. I want a combine story that nobody talks about, or something that blew your mind. For example, Johnny Manziel, straight trashed at combines. Like, you know, he was just like the worst. I mean, in bad shape, but somehow got through it, like somehow put it together and still was able to get a first round pick. Like, do you have any story off the top of your head that you can tell that just craziness of missing meetings or saying something so stupid in a meetings or something crazy or something? I know I'm catching you off guard here.
No. I've got one. I don't think I've ever shared it publicly.
Yeah. That's the ones I want.
We can laugh about it now. I'm not going to say exactly what was said because I don't know how much is public, but it was made public. Anyway, Joey Bosa, here's what happens. You go to workouts, then you do, in my previous gig, at TV, and now I'll be doing, you know, the McShay Show on YouTube, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcast. But I'm not into all that. But then when you're doing all the extra stuff or grabbing some dinner or starting to watch some tape, all the guys in the league are in meetings. They do for interviews every night, right? So they get back at like sometimes 10, 11 o'clock at night. And that's when they all want to like go out and grab a drink, grab a quick bite, whatever it is. But we always used to post up in the hotel and just watch tape. And so guys would come back and a bunch of teams would be staying at the same hotel. So me and another guy that we worked with would be watching tape, and guys would come in and just tell funny stories. And one of my favorites of all time, and I won't say the organization, I won't get into some of the details, but Joey Bosa comes in and they described it at the time. It's been a long time, but they described it at the time like you got to understand, we got a bunch of alpha dogs walking in the room. We got a bunch of guys who are hungry, like, yes, sir, no, sir, and like foaming at the mouth and ready to like show how tough they are and how much they love ball. And they've been coached by like they're, you know, they've got an agent and they've got a PR team and they've coached them for all this stuff, right? And then Bosa, who's going to be a top five pick, comes like just lagging in, you know? And one scout was like, he's Joey Spicola, right? And he's like, hey, what's going on, man? You know? And it's like so different from the vibe that's been in the room. And you've got usually like defensive line coaches or defensive coaches grilling these guys. And so like the testosterone and the like, it's like vicious in these rooms sometimes. And he just comes rolling in kind of like disheveled, like, hey, what's going on, man? How are you? You know, Joey Spicola, like, was how they described it. From Fast Times at Ridgemont High, for those who are, I know I'm dating myself. And so apparently they start like, you know, Joey, we want to ask you about, apparently he sent out a tweet about like bros over hoes, like no girls invited to the party tonight or something, like from 3 years earlier when he was like in high school, right? A senior in high school, something like that. And they're like, do you think this is appropriate? Like, is this the kind of person that you're? And he's like, no, I never sent that. That wasn't me. And they're like, Joey, I'm reading your Twitter right now. And he flips it around. He's like, oh, I don't remember that, man. And the place, and like, and they're, and the person who's grilling him is pissed off, right? It's like, you're going to sit here and lie to me? You know, like he's like spitting out of his mouth. And the scouts are in the back like, meanwhile they're picking at like 26, you know, and Joey doesn't care, but it's just who he is, right? The most intent, like he's gonna work out, he's gonna give everything he has. But I remember just crying laughing hearing that story.
Yeah,
so who's somebody you got? Look at the combine.
You guys got real quiet on that.
Who's someone that's outside your top 100 or even maybe sort of the bottom part of that who's going to have a phenomenal weekend and just be the sort of talk of the combine in a way? Because one, for me, I think you mentioned the Georgia guys. I could see Jared Wilson putting up some ridiculous speed type numbers, shuttle type numbers, the center from Georgia.
Yep. Yep. I think he's the best center in this class. I think he's going to be, he's in the top 32. He's going to go in the first round, but I'm really interested to see Jihad Campbell, the way, just his athletic traits. I think he's going to work out really well. I keep hearing that too, but just watching the tape, I think he's going to have an awesome week. And I think part of what's so exciting about him is his ability to rush off the edge too. But beyond that, like going down, I mean, Anais Smith, he might run the fastest 40. I want to see Elijah, Arroyo's not going to work out. That's right. The Florida State, the Miami tight end. Yeah. Miami tight end. But, beyond, I think I want to see Harold Fannin Jr. from Bowling Green, athletically gifted tight end. This tight end class is better than people think with, obviously Warren at the top. But I think Loveland from Michigan is a darn good player who just no one could get him the ball this past year. But I think Fannin's going to have a good week. I think those are some of the guys. I want to see, like, Tez Johnson, he's going to have to work out really well, because he's so undersized. Because he's tiny, man. But
But Todd, could anybody put a hand on him at the Senior Bowl? Gosh.
No, that's what I'm saying. So, like, if he can run a 40 that matches up with all the quickness and explosiveness that you see, I think that'll help his cause, because he's a player, like, you talk to scouts, teams don't want to draft small guys at receiver. They just don't. The history isn't very good.
Yeah. What about you mentioned the tight ends being a great class. The tight end position obviously is changing so much, but like Bowers has to help Warren. I mean, right? Like seeing him go in the NFL and completely tear it up and be great. Now you watch Warren, who's, very similar. Warren's probably bigger and a little slower, right? But still great after the catch. Still, really good at feeling bodies near him. Obviously, blocking is good. He gives everything he has. He fights. Like, he's got that DNA. Like, the tight end class, besides him, obviously, too, but does that class become more valued now because of what you've seen?
I mean, if they can play, teams love tight ends. If they can play, it's just hard to find them, right? There's just not many of those guys that come out in a given draft. But this year's class, it's really good compared to what we normally see. Like, I'm not making perfect comps to them, but Warren's your Gronk, right? And Loveland is your, like, Kelsey. Warren can be an inline blocker, can do all those things. He's a bulldozer after the catch. Whereas with Kelsey, like, you know what you're getting is a blocker, and it's not great. And I think Loveland's a little bit more in that mold. But talk about, like, a dynamic chess piece and move him around and create mismatches and finding
runs like a runs home. Routes like a wide receiver.
Yeah. I mean, yes, absolutely. So I think when you have a class, like, you can make an argument that these are two of the best 13, 14 players in this entire class. And you never see that. I think it's, I did something the other day. It could be like the first time since like 98 or something crazy that two tight ends go in like the top 17 picks. Don't quote me exactly on that, but it's been a long, long time since we've seen two tight ends that have a chance to go this high in the draft. And then beyond that, I mentioned Arroyo from Miami. One year, really, like one great chunk. That Florida game was his best game ever. But his talent and his ability to create after the catch and his route running, like, I just think he's going to continue to get better if he can stay healthy, which obviously has been a problem. I mentioned Fannin. I like Gunnar Helm too.
Very much so.
I just like
good football player.
Really,
what's
good
he gonna run though? He looks slow.
Yeah, yeah, 4.8, maybe. No surprise,
Yeah,
I'm saying in the late second, early third to get
big a guy frame. He's gonna catch everything thrown to him. He's a good player, just not an elite athlete for sure.
Right. Yeah. I'm excited about the tight end class.
I agree, by the way. But so working with DP, how much did he annoy you with the texting, or what was some quirks that Pollock brought to the table as a ESPN colleague that may have gotten you rubbed you wrong way, or was like, oh, very endearing. Like, this is Pollock.
We would always have these, you know, whether it was like Rose Bowl or national championship or whatever big bowl game or something, like he'd clear out a room, man. We'd always have a room set up with like executive and the my man has no shame. He'd clear out a room. Okay. That's number one. And would have no problem doing it. Like he eats all that healthy food, but it comes out a different way.
Second person to mention that, by the way, recently.
Yeah.
Palmer, Jesse Palmer mentioned the same.
Yeah. I mean, it would like violent, man. Like violent.
You're corroborating.
Yeah. His energy is like, honest to God, like it wakes up the room. It makes long days fun and exciting. But like every once in a while, at like 7 a.m. or like a 4:30 in the morning, rolling up to the Rose Bowl. And you're like, I'm just like still peeling it out of my eyes. And like, I haven't had a cup of coffee or like, you know, and he's just like, boop, 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 and it's like, DP, I'm going to need like 5 minutes, bro. Like five, you know, just give me five. We can have this like in-depth conversation about why my evaluation on this player sucks and I'm so far off. But like, can we do it at, I don't know, 6:30 in the morning, not 4? But other than that, man, absolute joy. Absolute joy.
How bad do you feel for my wife?
She knew what she was signing up for. You were forced on us. We didn't hire you.
No, I'm playing. That's true. Man. No, I'm
I say it all joking. I my introduction to you and when my very, let's put it this way. There's a lot of people who could have come on. I could have asked to come on the very first time we had the McShay show, and Pollock was the guy that I asked on because that's how much I appreciate him, respect him, how good of a friend he's been to me over the years. And so like this is all in good fun. I love the man.
Always been fun, man. Always appreciate your insight. Always appreciate your honesty. And look forward to watching you, man. Hey, you get to go out there and watch those underwear Olympics. The shorts keep getting shorter. Like, this is the first time ever in my life that we're going to church camp now with like teenagers, and we're more concerned with what the boys are wearing than the girls. Like, the shorts are just getting shorter, and the combines, it just keeps getting worse. But I know you'll have fun and you'll be in your element. And I'm glad you're back doing your thing, man. I know you got to be excited to be doing your thing again. And I know there's a lot of people that are watching. And I'm not gonna ask you to do it because I know it's weird. I know it's awkward. But the McShay Show, he's got his show on YouTube. You can check out. He did it all during college football. Obviously now in his element, in his sweet spot, he knows all of these people. He's connected. And the McShay Report too, right? So you've got that with all of your guys that have coming out, and you've teamed up with the Ringer, and you got your mock drafts, and I can't wait because we can hold it to you, sucker. Like, we can be like,
I know, you were wrong. Just like this 2005 scouting when I was back at the Sporting News.
Spot on. Well, we appreciate you, big homie.
I appreciate you, fellas. It's always fun. I'll see you guys soon.
See you, brother.